Good afternoon, and my apologies for not being able to present in person. Sometimes there are unintended consequences to our actions, and I did experience one this week. My talk is entitled Integrated Economic and Public Health Perspectives, and also tries to provide a little bit of a counterpoint to the previous presentation. There really is nothing to disclose here. So, the last talk was called Why We Need a Food Temperance Movement, and I just want to provide a slightly different perspective on the prohibition up here. There certainly was a lot of enthusiasm of public health advocates for the temperance movement and prohibition, although the consequences of prohibition differed rather dramatically from initial expectations. One of the huge stories was when the mayor of Berlin, Gustav Fest at that time, visited New York City in 1929. So he saw prohibition in action and asked his counterpart, Mayor James Walker, when was prohibition going to go into effect? Well, as you know, in 1929, prohibition had been in law for almost a decade. The fact that Berger had to ask Italian plenty about how well it was working. So, a lot of the impacts increased clothing sales, good for theaters, because people are bringing other types of entertainment, household goods. Well, none of that had fruition. The initial economic effects were largely negative. Declining rents, faltering the entertainment industry, a huge drop in government revenue, and a large enforcement cost. So, provision was very costly here, additional costs. To completely overwhelm the criminal justice system as well. One of the unintended side effects on public health was about 1,000 annual health employees every year because of tainted alcohol. Corruption and the rights organized crime were probably the worst parts of unintended consequences of prohibition. During that time, the stereotype of the corrupt prohibition agent or local policemen, undermined public trust in law enforcement for certainly one decade, possibly longer. Does public health make for such a great leader? I want to talk about the public health advocacy has a very shaky scientific track record. So the unintended consequences of prohibition we just talked about. But there have been scientific failures in more recent time that are really not very discouraging, very discouraging, in particular regarding diet. Diet advice is not very long ago. It was very different. Now it's not small change, it's a very substantive change, because 2 decades ago it was fat is bad. We need to cut down fat and eat more carbohydrates and shift to diet. People may actually have listened to that, and that certainly may have exacerbated excess weight gain. Because what you see in the 80s was the demand all of a sudden for non-fat, low-fat goods, but at the same time, an increase in carbohydrates, and that was not good. Now, of course, the story is very different. It's no longer about reducing fats, but about differences in fats, and sometimes even encouraging certain types of healthier fats. Carbohydrate consumption is no longer generally encouraged, but well, the damage may have been done. Public health advocates often are all the puzzles when their well-intended health proposals don't receive enthusiastic support. The reason for that, I would say, is that changes in diet and physical activity transcend public health. And there's more to it, and that affects acceptability. Every piece of legislation, regulation, or intervention creates winners and losers. And there are legitimate interests beyond public health or health. That brings me to the main point I want to make today, which is economic versus public health view. And the fact that I think both play an important role in the policy process, and that interventions that are supported by both perspectives are most likely to be effective and politically acceptable. Now, admittedly, economic and public health often seem to be at loggerheads, but I think it's more a perception then understand the difference. There are differences in philosophical approaches that may create a seeming tension, but there is not necessarily a substantive tension. Without understanding an economic perspective, health and public health professionals will have a more limited influence because they're missing a big chunk of what policy debate is about. So let me contrast the two views, maybe a bit of a caricature, but I think I get the real essence of where the tensions come from. The public health view is straightforward. Intervene if health could be improved. Not so openly stated is a rather technocratic tendency of public health. It's really expert opinion that evaluates what desirable outcomes are, not individual choice, expert opinion. That directly leads to some of the limitations. There is no explicit role for individual preferences. There's no explicit consideration of other trade-offs. Often, proposals ignore costs and burden of regulations that are not borne by public health departments. I'm sometimes really puzzled when I'm being told that raising taxes is costless. No, raising taxes is not costless. This raising taxes has huge costs to the people who pay the tax. It distorts economic incentives in a way that will increase the social cost even more than the amount that you raise taxes by. So it's not a free policy, nor is regulation or prohibiting some. These are very costly interventions. We need to look at the total social costs. As a consequence, some public health perspectives are really often out of touch with majority opinion, and that makes industry lobbies seem the more reasonable party, and even creates an opening for lobbyists that really don't deserve an opening. One group, the consumerfreedom.com folks. They're talented. Unfortunately, they're not using their talents to very good purposes. But take a look at the website. What they're doing resonates with the American public more than I wish it would. On the other side, you have the economic view that sees health as one important, but only one of many other important ones. Economic view really makes consumer sovereignty a centerpiece, and consumer sovereignty is what decides outcomes. People's individual choices, not a dictator, regardless of how benevolent the dictator might be. It could have an MD degree, maybe. Consumer sovereignty is important in the US, it's a central feature of the US institutional framework, and policies that ignore that, they always have some problems. The economic view puts some constraints on when there should be interventions. And the interventions are really limited to when there are market failures, which is the role of externalities and the provision of public goods and services information problems. That's when economists would agree, yes, there's a role here for interventions in government. Let me point out one important distinction that leads to very different conclusions about when we want to do interventions, which is internal versus external. The internal costs of poor health habits are the costs that are really borne by individuals and family members themselves. And to an economist, costs do not necessarily mean money. Costs is about use of resources. External costs are costs imposed on others. And again, they don't need to be financial. Crime, drunk driving, accidents, their real costs are not necessarily money, but other costs. So if costs are internal, affecting people who make their own decisions, and only it affects themselves, should we be concerned? Public health advocates would say, oh, yes, and economists might say, no, if they have a market failure. Plenty of limitations to the economic view, certainly. Fortunately, it's becoming more of a minority that exaggerated and unrealistic belief in rationality. Overall, economics still has a long way to go, needs to work harder to integrate insights from psychology and the social sciences better. Although we have to say that behavioral economics has come a long way and is definitely moving into the right direction. I want to talk about one example of a low-hanging fruit where public health and economics could come together, and strangely enough, it has not gone nearly as far as it should, which is menu labeling for restaurant meals and food, generally food away from home. Menu labeling would be fully consistent with standard economic view. Yet it's often dismissed as ineffective. I don't think so. We do not need that everybody reacts to the information, or even most people. In fact, just a small shift in consumption pattern by a minority of people can also profitability and lead to large market shifts. Restaurants will react if even just a few people change their decisions. But it's very hard to see or make the argument that markets can be efficient in the absence of key information about food. How could you have rational, well-informed consumers if they have no information about what the food is, and the only dimensions they can evaluate is portion size and how much it costs? But that really creates competition on size and value and not on nutritional value. And that's what we really want it to be. So it would be easy, but even those changes have yet to be implemented. The Affordable Care Act had some, was a law that required menu labeling. There are no regulations, in fact, in effect at this point, even 2 years later. We stepped back in California. There was a state law going to become effective, and a lot of restaurants were anticipating it. And we saw more menu labeling 2 years ago in California than we see now. And also, let me summarize here. Economics is concerned with the distribution of costs, benefits, and that's an important complement to the public health. Economists see market failures as a necessary requirement in order to have intervention. Bringing economics and public health together will bridge the values of individual responsibility and collective action. Framing community intervention as choice architecture that enables better individual choice is probably a good thing and will make policies more politically acceptable. It is really consistent with lots of forms of regulations, but it certainly is not consistent with another temperate style. So my punchline conclusion is interventions may be most successful and politically sustainable when public health and economic perspectives coincide. Thank you for your attention and have a nice evening. Bye-bye.